Hi, everyone. This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. Great to have you back. So we have a new markerless episode this week. Chris will be back next week with the new markers newsmakers. But I have a couple of great conversations for you. First, I'll be speaking with Steve Bell. If you're on LinkedIn following surgical robotics, no doubt you know Steve Bell. He's got a lot of great insights, content. He's got his own podcast, and he's got a lot of experience in the surgical robotics space. We'll talk with Steve next week, actually, more extensively. I'm going to sit down with Steve and Joe Mullings of the Mullings Group to review what's happening at SRS's annual meeting. That's the Society of Robotic Surgery, their annual meeting in Orlando. I'll be down there. If you'll be there, please shoot me a message on LinkedIn. I would love to connect and say hello and hopefully meet your robot. I'll be doing some recording down there, some videos and some audio, but mostly video. And really would, again, like to hear your story and share it with our Device Talks community. So I spoke with Steve Bell about SRS. And then later on, you'll hear from Abby Hunter-Syed. She is the director of Olympus Innovation Ventures, which is the venture group of the Olympus Corporation. Abby's got some experience both as a VC and an entrepreneur, and she sort of explains how she uses those experiences to not only guide her investment, but also help inform her or direct her in how to engage with entrepreneurs. She's got, an important message for all investors. And I think a quality that many entrepreneurs will find compelling. So make sure you listen to the conversation I had with Abby Hunter-Syed a little later in the podcast. Before we begin this conversation, I want to remind you, we'll have a Device Talks Tuesdays this coming Tuesday. It'll be June 18th at 4 p.m. I'll be speaking with the fine folks at Millar. The conversation is called From Wafer to Commercialization, How Partnering with a Vertically Integrated Contract Manufacturer Can Accelerate Innovation. And I worked with them this week on our sort of our practice session. Very cool presentation, a lot of cool sensors and miniaturization involved. So definitely want to check that out. Go to devicetalks.com to register for that. It's free. You can watch it live. You can watch on demand, ask questions either way. So it's all in all a very productive use of your time. So don't miss out. That is it. I'm going to get this podcast episode started. Once again, if you're at SRS or planning to be at SRS's annual meeting next week, make sure you connect with me on LinkedIn. Shoot me a message. I'd love to get together. All right, let's get. Oh, wait, one more thing. And this is important. Device Talks West registration is opening next week. I'll be sending out a message to past attendees, giving you an opportunity to register early, but everyone will be able to get on the website next week. We'll send out more information and more announcements about that. Go to west.devicetalks.com, where the agenda is starting to fill out. It's going to be a great 2 days, really focusing on technology of the area. We'll have several innovative tracks that you can take a look at, working with a lot of the local players. So it should be a great way to tell your medtech story and to learn about others as well. So next week, go to west.devicetalks.com to register. All right, now let us get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Steve Bell, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Tom. Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure.
It's great to have you. I've been watching your videos. I don't know how you do all the walking and talking without stumbling into something, but it's quite... Do you have a GoPro or something? Like, what's going on there? You don't have an arm out for 20 minutes.
No. So I have a DJI gimbal.
Okay.
But now and again, if you see an edit in there, if you see a slight jump cut and you might
see it... I've noticed a couple. Yep.
It's because I've literally fallen over.
And I wondered that yesterday. I'm like, uh-oh, he tripped. Or he got attacked by one of those dogs that was barking at you.
the, The dog's been crazy. So yeah, one of the dogs was barking. I didn't concentrate and I didn't see a root and I actually fell over. So. Secrets.
I had one of those. I was not recording, thank goodness. I wish I had, though, because it was on this comic. I tripped it running in the woods and I was just like airborne for a good minute. I'm like, it felt like, you know, like, oh, this is going to hurt. And then I was like, yeah, it did hurt. It did hurt. So, so I've really enjoyed your content, and we can direct people to your website. And I've sort of wondered, as you have been espousing on surgical robotics and other things, you know, what is your background? How did you find your way into medtech, and where do you draw all these great insights from?
Yeah, oh, thanks. So actually, I've been in medtech for 34 years. I've actually started back in, it was the very early 90s before laparoscopy began. And the funny thing is, I actually got into medical devices by a complete and utter mistake. I was actually going for what I thought was a drug rep interview because I lost the piece of paper that I was going to go for. So I turned up for a drug interview telling them about their great drug, which was Proline and Vicryl, which are just two sutures. And the guy just said, well, first of all, we're not the suture division. Second, they're not drugs. And third, you know, you're in the wrong interview. And yeah. So it was by mistake. I said, look, just give me a job. I was desperate. So yeah.
That's not so dissimilar to mine, where I just was desperate to work at the Boston Business Journal, and healthcare and medtech was the only thing open. I'm like, I'll take it. Yeah, I was hoping for real estate, but I'll go with healthcare. Sounds great too, and it's worked out pretty well.
But I felt really lucky because I actually went to, which I still think is one of the best companies in the world, which is Johnson & Johnson. So my first job ever was Johnson & Johnson. So as a young, fresh-faced person learning medical device, J&J is an absolutely phenomenal company to go through to learn the basics of med tech and how companies work in healthcare. You know, you don't get much better than J&J. So I was there for 16 years and I did the whole thing, which was the transition from open to laparoscopic surgery. Mm-hmm. I hit it just that piece, and it was a beautiful moment in history when there was this, you know, US Surgical versus Ethicon that became Ethicon Endosurgery. And we had this whole, it was just an amazing time. And I got a lot of respect for all the people who were involved in that at the time. And then I eventually left J&J and did the California startup. So I did multiple California startups, literally flying between Rome and Irvine once every 2 weeks. I used to fly back and forwards. It was a bit crazy. I had a lot of air miles. And then I did a turnaround at a company called RTI, which you may know, which is RTI, which was the I did on the biologic side. And then back in 2014, Martin Frost asked me to come to help them a little bit, to advise them for CMR Surgical, which was a surgical robotics company, and I had previous experience with surgical robotics. And the sort of, as they say, the rest is history. In 2017, I joined them full time and was their chief commercial officer for 6 years and took a good run at Intuitive.
That must have been exciting. And so that's a great perspective, and it's kind of one that people can hear in your thoughts, including the most recent one, which was not very promising for anyone who's going to try to make a run at Intuitive. You're declaring, in many cases, the game all but over. But where can I direct people? Where can folk find your thoughts?
So I set up a website which is called howtostartupinmedtech.com. I mean, it is what it says. It's a site that's been designed. There's a course that runs on there, which helps young startup medtech companies from the A to Z of what you need to do to build a successful startup in medtech, all the way from pre-seed all the way through to exit. But I have on there two parallel things, which one is a podcast that I do called MedTech Mavericks, and I also have a blog, and that's where you find most of my articles on surgical robotics, is in the blog on that site. So
that's great. So we'll be at SRS next week. We'll be recording with Joe Mullings on Saturday, sort of recapping what we've seen so far. I've never been, and we were just starting to have this conversation before I pushed record. What can I look forward to? Tell me a bit, and my listeners a bit about SRS.
Yeah, it's kind of like the all-star place for surgical robotics. And it's been, you know, Vit Patel out of Florida sort of set this up, urologist out of Florida set it up years ago. And it was originally, you know, for surgical robotics, but it's kind of expanded and there's a lot more healthcare robotics that are in there. So there's probably going to see some new and exciting healthcare robotics in there as well. And it's just, when I started back in the day and I went to the first one, it was really intuitive, right? Because they were the only ones out there. Mm-hmm. And now what I think is really exciting, and especially this year, is that you're going to see a whole host of different robots. You know, I think there's going to be something like 20 robots there that are going to get a chance to go and sit on them and have a go of and them out. And, yeah, so I think it'll be really, really cool. Plus, you get a lot of great insights from the investors and from industry. And it's, I love the way that it's built, that it's not like a clinical surgical robotic. There's lots of those around. This has got much more of a community around it. So I think you'll find it really, really interesting.
No, that's what was appealing to me. And I'll be there armed with my new iPhone. I got a new iPhone, so I'd have better video capability. And I'll be recording some stuff and posting on LinkedIn. So folks should follow me and, of course, Steve. So what we'll again be recapping next week, and we're going to keep this particular interview short, but what are some of the storylines? What are you going into? What's your notebook say as you land in Orlando, Florida?
Yeah. So obviously one of the big headlines has been Intuitive and their continual march with Da Vinci 5. So that'll be a big focus, I think, of the meeting and some of the things that I'll be talking about there with you and Joe. What does that do? Because they kind of set the bar. And then how is everyone else sort of reacting around that? Storz acquiring Asensus is another really big storyline that's going on at the minute. You've got some really good companies coming out of China like Renova Robotics and Tumai, which is Microport Medbot, that, you know, who got CE mark just literally last week. So that's another interesting line there. And then this morning, there was a bit of a bombshell dropped by SSII, which is the Surgical Innovations SS Innovations from India, that just out of nowhere launched Mantra 3, which was a pretty exciting robot this morning. And I think that they're going to have it there. They, you know, they dropped me a note saying, hey, come drop by and look at it. So that's fantastic. So I think it's just going to be really lots of exciting things for us to talk about, to really review where the whole industry is going. The competition's getting hot. You know, and I did put out my talk saying that no one else is going to win. You know, it is to be provocative and to get people to up their game. I really want people to up their game. As I said in the interview, I think competition is super healthy in any area of health, healthcare. And yeah, I think it's an exciting time in surgical robotics. So SRS, I think, will be just a fantastic meeting this year.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you in person. This is the second time we've actually had the chance to talk to each other, not through LinkedIn or videos. Excited. This is the first I heard about Mantra. Any other interesting, which I'm going to be going around my phone recording things. What are the three robots I should see in your mind?
Yeah. So I think definitely if you get a chance to look at Renova Carina, I think that's a really interesting one because that's John Ma, who's ex-Fosun from China, who basically introduced Intuitive to China. But he's got a lot of ex-Verb and Auris people in his team. Really smart design of a little robot and very nice. I think SSI Mantra will be a very good one to look at just because they've put some really out there features on it. There's no console. You sit in a chair and you put a headset on. It's like really cool. Of course, Da Vinci 5, which is the benchmark. So you got to look at that. It would be impossible to go there and not look at that. And then I think some of the smaller mini robots you might find interesting, like Virtual Incision with the mirror system, the one that they had linking up to the space station. You know, I think the team over there, and I know Piet very well. Yeah, I think they're doing some very interesting things. And then, of course, you're going to have Moon Surgical there with their new moon truck, which I'm very interested to see.
So I just saw the post on LinkedIn about that.
Yeah, look pretty cool. So definitely want to go and see. You know, I've played on the Moon Surgical in their office in Paris. So keen to see their moon truck and what they've got in there. That'll be really cool.
All right. I do love the buzz surrounding this. I feel like I'm going to a consumer product show. It's just got a lot of excitement. So fantastic. Steve, well, I look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for spending a few minutes here on the podcast.
Thanks very much. I really look forward to seeing you next week. Take care.
All right, it was great talking with Steve Bell. Once again, I'll be talking with him and Joe Mullings next week at SRS, and we'll run some or all of those conversation or that conversation here on the Device Talks weekly podcast. Looking forward to getting some insights and takeaways from the SRS meeting. Now I'd like to bring in Abby Hunter Syed of Olympus Innovation Ventures. And Abby's got a great perspective on the corporate venturing world. So let's listen. Well, Abby Hunter Syed, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can't wait to hear more about what you're doing on behalf of Olympus. It's an interesting time to be a corporate investor. Lots going on in that space. So I want to understand how you're approaching those opportunities. But first, as always, we'd love to learn how you found your way to MedTech. It looks like just from your background looking at LinkedIn, you came in sort of through the consultant VC route versus the corporate route.
I did. I kind of got into it by mistake, as a matter of fact. You know, I started out my career as a founder myself and then got a little bit more lucky than good on the software solution that we built. And so I used that money to go back to grad school to learn best practices. Spent like the next 10 years building and scaling businesses across four different continents with consulting groups like the Boston Consulting Group. And I landed at Morgan Stanley on the private equity side of the business. And it was the first time that I'd ever had the experience of like writing a check and helping a business scale. And I thought it was really cool, right? But instead of doing it for big businesses, I wanted to go back to the startup world. And so that's how I landed in VC. And I spent 5 years with LDV Capital in New York, where we are investing in pre-seed and seed stage companies that leverage computer vision, machine learning, and AI in order to analyze visual data. And after 5 years there, you know, 25 investments under our belt, the one thing that we started to look at was, well, the visual data that's the most prolific across the globe is medical data, right? So nearly half the portfolio of our companies ended up being in the medical space. And so that's really kind of how I started to get into med tech itself is not looking at med tech, but looking at actual the visual data and where the industry is going as a whole and making some investments into the space before I got introduced to Olympus, where I've now been at Olympus about 2 years. And it's my first 2 years ever in med tech, med devices. At OIV, we invest in companies that are building devices, diagnostics, or digital health tools that can help complement or extend our market-leading endoscopic solutions portfolio. And so it's really been remarkable and so many learnings that I've had over the past 2 years of working on this side of the aisle.
I'd love to understand the visual data. What is it? What does that mean? And what was so interesting about how it represented MedTech? What were you sort of seeing?
Yeah, so visual data essentially is photos, videos, LIDAR, radar, ultrasound, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, any time where you are generating some type of image, right, is something that I would consider visual data, right? And I think specifically in med tech, right, visual data has been absolutely critical to changing care, right? The ability to see into somebody's body, whether that's via MRI or whether that is an endoscope, right, has really remarkably changed the ability of doctors to treat people, improve outcomes, improve patient experience, right? Yep. And so, shocker, but it was one of the first places where visual data became absolutely prolific. And now it's one of those places where we can see so much happening in terms of AI, computer vision, you know, generative AI really playing a role in looking at how patients are treated and diagnosed.
Oh, that's a great point. And we've talked about that just at a recent podcast about, you know, how imaging has gone from being an X-ray, a diagnostic tool, to being a way to sort of plan a surgery or procedure. And now it's become an integral part of the treatment itself. So it's definitely been an evolution of that. So how did you come to know about the opportunity at Olympus? Because it seemed like a perfect fit since that was your interest and sort of your entry into MedTech.
Yeah, actually, I came about it from one of my past co-founders. He had joined Olympus and he said, hey, you know, you got to come check this out. They're really building some remarkable stuff. It's under a big transformation at the moment. They'd gone from, you know, being a consumer camera business to divesting that and becoming just a pure med tech play. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot happening over here. It's an exciting time. And so that's how I got introduced to Olympus. And I haven't looked back.
That's great. So tell us about Olympus Innovation Ventures. You know,
yeah.
How big is it? How are you approaching things? To give us some details.
Absolutely. So OIV is a standard corporate venture capital vehicle. We are the only CVC arm of Olympus, right? And Olympus as a whole was tasked with, for my new CEO, Stefan Kaufman, with elevating Olympus's unique capabilities with breakthrough innovations, right? And OIV was kind of born out of that goal for Olympus. With the idea of, you know, there's so much happening in the startup landscape from an innovation perspective, how can we tap into that? How can we, you know, learn from startups and also help coach startups as they go about building really new innovations that can ultimately improve the patient care pathway? And so that's where Olympus Innovation Ventures came about. And what we were tasked with was investing in passionate founders who are looking to revolutionize these medical solutions. So we've been in existence for about 3 years now. We've made 5 investments. 3 of them are public, 2 more, you know, you'll hear about shortly. And we've got $50 million that we are actively deploying through OIV Fund 1.
Okay, so the question I'm sure every entrepreneur is wondering, what stage are you looking at? What do you consider early and what do you consider later?
Yeah, so we're stage agnostic, but we say, you know, we can invest anywhere between seed and series D, depending on the company and the technology, right? Mm-hmm. We focus on all of the clinical areas where Olympus operates, whether that's GI, respiratory, urology, women's health, ENT, or general surgery. And in general, we're writing checks between $500K and $5 million across these businesses. We look at things that are preclinical, but that's what we really think is being very early for us, is after first in human trials or first in human data is when we've been able to make investments in things that have regulatory clearance ahead of them.
And does everything have an imaging component to it, or are you looking at investing in things in adjacencies maybe that have more of a therapeutic value?
Yeah, so we think about really kind of 3 different buckets for our investments. So one are our core businesses that could really strongly fit into an existing Olympus business line. The other half of the portfolio we'd like to invest in both adjacencies, so things that can complement our products, so not necessarily imaging, and then also things that are enabling, so businesses that can ultimately improve the care pathway of Olympus products. So they don't have to necessarily be in imaging at all, but just deployed when our endoscopes are being deployed.
I want to get into sort of how you engage with portfolio companies, how you work in a system other than write them that check. But if you don't mind, I just want to go back into your past a bit and just unpack something. You mentioned you started a company and sold a company. What was the company? What kind of company was it?
Yeah, so it was just a software company that was working on providing intelligence to people who were studying, living, or working abroad. And, you know, lots of ups and downs on it, right? I wouldn't necessarily call it like a successful exit, but it was enough of a one that taught me a little bit about what it's like to be in founder's shoes. And that's the thing that like I carry forth with me through all of this, right? Making sure that even though we sit on the opposite side of the table to begin with, that we're very forthright and transparent with the founders that we're talking to, that we are empathetic to the challenges that they're facing, right? And that we're also very open about what's in front of them, right? There's no such thing as a no-risk investment, right? Mm-hmm. But making sure that we are here to coach them through and we know what some of those challenges are going to be so that we can find the right experts within Olympus in order to help them overcome those. And so that's kind of how I think about my experience as a founder and how I translate that into the other side of the table now sitting on the CVC side of things.
That's really interesting. No, that's it's a unique perspective to have, I think, because I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, particularly, and I think maybe exclusively first-time ones, they are fully committed, invested, and believe, of course they do, in their approach, and they see it as it's as sort of their as their shot. Like they're completely vested in its success. So I always found it to be an interesting dynamic when you have someone like that who's so passionate, almost an evangelist about an idea, and then they have to interact and rely upon folks who you have several shots on goal. You want them all to go in, but you are not as committed. So how do you draw from that experience you had where, you know, maybe it wasn't, you weren't buying an island from your returns, but you were able to go to school and really focus your life in a positive direction, in a more positive direction. How do you sort of draw from that? And how do you sort of, if you could delve a little more into balancing that relationship between investors and entrepreneurs, because I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the hardest things for people is to actually be genuine and honest with their feedback, right? Mm-hmm. On the venture side of things, sometimes people shy away from giving like genuine feedback to startups. And the way that
which drives startups crazy, by the way. It's like, it's, I'm not sure why.
100%. 100%, right? It's, you know, if you've ever been searching for a job and never gotten feedback on why you didn't get it after an interview, right? Like, it's the same sort of feeling as when you're a founder and you're doing hundreds of pitches, right?
Yep.
Sometimes, you know, multiple pitches, multiple conversations with the same investor, and then they come back, you know, 2 months later and they say, oh, sorry, you know, like you're just too early for us. You know, you couldn't tell that based on our pitch deck 2 months ago and say,
I didn't get any earlier over these 6 months. They actually got later. It's like,
exactly. Like, exactly. Yeah. And so I think that that's one of the main things that I think about and was really kind of embedded in me at my last fund at LDB Capital with Evan Nicholson, who was my mentor there and the general partner, was just about giving real honest feedback and giving it quickly, right? Mm-hmm. Because then you've still made that time valuable for the entrepreneur and you've helped make them better, whether that's from a pitching perspective or from a business model perspective or wherever it was that you felt wasn't a fit for investment by you, you know, at least you framed that accurately for them in order for them to add that as a learning. So that wasn't a total time waste for them. Right. And so that's one of the things that we make sure that we really try to do at OIV now.
But on the flip side, sort of unpacking how investors look at things, I would think, at least when someone pitches a new idea to me for something we're doing, I very rarely will jump on it right away and say, yes, absolutely, let's do it. Sometimes that happens, but very often I need to kind of get off the call and sort of let it ruminate and see, you know, see how things sort of fit into a bigger picture. How does that work for, you're not going to speak for your whole class of investors, but for you, like when you see an idea, is there a light bulb, aha, yes, that's it? Or is like, or is there, okay, you know, I'm really excited about what you're saying. I hear the potential that you have, but I need to go back and really obviously do due diligence, but also just sort of take time to see where that fits. How do investors sort of look at that? Because you can't necessarily give that honest feedback or at least correct honest feedback right away. I imagine you need some time to consider things and to see where things fit.
100%. And so I think there's kind of two different ways that it can happen, right? So sometimes when, for example, I've had an investment thesis about an area, right? Where I've thought long about what I think it takes to win and what's super exciting about this space. And I've talked to many, many different companies in this space and I meet the one, right? Then it's an automatic, right? Like I hear their pitch, like, you know, I meet the founders and I say, oh, man, this is it. That is so cool. We've got to diligence it still, right? Like we've got to make sure that everything checks out. But like there's just that kind of meet cute to some extent, right?
Yep.
And then there's the other ones where you're like, man, I've never thought about that before.
Yeah.
Let me run this by a few other people who probably have thought about this before and see what they think. Right. Especially as coming new to the med tech space. There's a lot of things where like I'll hear about it first. I'm like, wow, that's so exciting. And then I can take it back to, you know, MSA, to our medical and scientific affairs group. And I'll say, what about this? And they're like, no, Like, listen, we've seen this over and over and over again, and there's absolutely no way that this is going to work because the mechanism of action is wrong. Right. And it's brand new to me. Right. And so I think that that's one of the ways that is really exciting for me. And it's great for people who have deep curiosity about stuff is because I get to learn so much from all of the, 29,000 experts we have within Olympus who've been doing this for years. Right. And ultimately what I can do is I can take what their feedback was and I can bring it back to the company too and say, hey, this is one of the questions that I got internally from this. Like, do you have any understanding of why it works this way or how it works this way or what makes you different than like these other five technologies that they cited that they've seen in the past? Mm-hmm. What's your differentiator? Right. And so that's kind of how I think about, the two different ways in which you can meet and be intrigued by a technology or a team, or product, right? Is you've either had a deep understanding of it from the get-go, and this is the perfect one that aligns with all of that, or two, you have to kind of build around it by leveraging the expertise and experience and knowledge of, those people around you.
That's really interesting. Well, let's take the discussion to the next step. Okay, you've seen a company, you've either had the immediate aha, yes, this fits, or you've taken it back and checked it out and found it does fit. You've made that investment. Talk about how startup companies or privately held companies, smaller companies, sort of how you work with them, what sort of advisor you become for them, and how, what's the relationship with Olympus? How much support do they get from the company beyond the check?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that this is the really cool part of being on the CVC side of things, right? As opposed to an institutional investor. There's so much knowledge that institutional VCs have and expertise that they have around fundraising, around, board dynamics, around, even go-to-market strategy and so much more, right? Especially when you get into thesis-based funds. But on the CVC side of things, you have a massive network of people who are sitting behind you. Mm-hmm. And so for OIV, right, we're a really small team. On the Olympus side of things, it's just me, right? And we work with a great outsourced service provider on the sourcing and selection of companies. We work with Touchdown Ventures. But then when it comes to the building of companies, the way that it kind of works for us is I feel like I'm a little bit of the quarterback, right? Like, so OIV is a separate vehicle. It's a separate company. It's a separate team from everybody within Olympus. And so as an investor, you're getting OIV, right? But behind us, we have Olympus. And so I think about having kind of three pillars to our platform. One is around advisory. Second's around promotion, and then the third's around partnership. And so from an advisory perspective, I meet with our CEOs on a monthly basis and say, all right, what do you need help with? What are the challenges that you're facing at the moment? If that's fundraising, right, like I can help you out. If that's introductions to co-investors, myself or Touchdown can help you out. If that's your reimbursement strategy, right, then what I can do is I can go and I can find the right person within Olympus who's worked on a reimbursement strategy for a similar product and bring them to our next call. Mm-hmm. Right? And say, okay, let's walk through your three biggest questions, figure out how we can advise you on those, right? I can say, oh, you guys are looking to try to respond to an RFP by the VA. I can go find the one person at Olympus who that's what they do day in and day out. Mm-hmm. And a 20-minute call with them, right, on how to construct this RFP, makes a world of difference for an early stage company that's really only, 12 people deep and have never written one before, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how we think about the advisory component behind this and the value that Olympus can bring to the table as just an expert network that kind of sits behind the scenes.
There's a lot of ways I want to take this conversation next, but let's kind of focus on corporate venture more broadly. How do you find CVCs fitting into the current financing landscapes? They kind of ebb and wane as to influence on the size of investments or the percentage of investments that make up. It seems to me that this is a time when corporate venturing groups are becoming increasingly an important source of capital. Where does CVC fit into the medtech startup world right now?
I think it's a really hard time to raise capital, period. I think it's exceptionally hard for med device companies, especially med device companies who are preclinical, right? And so I think that there's a really unique position for CVCs as a whole, because most of the time, and again, it depends on the flavor of the CVC, but most of the time, if you're like OIV, we have both investment returns that we're targeting, as well as strategic returns that we're targeting, right? And what those strategic returns mean is, how can the innovations that the startup is working on really lead towards a future area that we have conviction on as Olympus that's going to be big, right? And so that view into the market, that insider knowledge of the market, I think can lend itself towards enabling us to have a view, a future view, that maybe just institutional VCs who are only targeting financial returns couldn't have, right? And so I think that that's why you see this in the space at the moment. A lot of CVCs are stepping up and taking on rounds that institutionals aren't able to or aren't able to build enough conviction around just yet, because they don't necessarily have the strategic view of the future that a corporate venture capitalist does.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So do you find it's naturally better, I think, if companies are able to raise a lot of capital when they need to. But I wonder if CVCs are becoming increasingly influential and important. I kind of see that as a positive to a degree, because you're bringing real life sort of experience, and as you noted earlier, real life sort of advisory folks from these companies and institutional investors. VCs can bring that as well, but I think the corporates really bring kind of frontline perspectives. What do you think the growing importance of, or the growing role of CVCs in the medtech startup world, what impact might that ultimately have, do you think, on the sector going forward? Are we going to find maybe better developed startups, better assisted startups, or it might be really difficult to say? It's kind of a far reaching question, but just curious.
You know, there's still so many different forces at play, right? So it's, unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball to be able to predict the future. But what I would suspect, right, is that you have startups who have a stronger baseline that they're working from, right? Because, every company, every product, every idea is built on some sort of hypothesis, right, about the way in which you could solve a problem, right? Like the good companies are, at least, right? In my perspective. And I think that you then spend the next 10 years proving out that or disproving that hypothesis. And I think that by having corporate venture capitalists have a role earlier on, right? I think that it could lend you to faster hypothesis testing, if you will, right? And so I think that that's kind of one of the most exciting parts about this.
Interesting. Final area, I just kind of want to, I think you mentioned a couple of your portfolio companies were public, and a few are going to be public soon. Can you give us talk about one or two, just to give us an example of the companies you're working with?
Absolutely. So our first investment out of Olympus Innovation Ventures was an investment in a company called Virgo SVS. Virgo is a cloud-based video capture management and AI analysis platform for endoscopy video. And that they ultimately help with patient recruitment for pharmaceutical trials around IBD and IBS. And so Virgo is one of the first ones that we've worked with. And Matt, the CEO there, has just been an incredible leader on this and very patient with us as we got, our first investment off the ground and OIV off the ground as a whole. It's been a wonderful relationship.
Now, how does that fit directly into Olympus's business, or is it, would you consider it an adjacent sort of area?
Yeah, I would consider it more of a core area, right? Because they're capturing endoscopy video. They've got one of the largest libraries of endoscopy video known across the globe, anyways. And so it really is pretty remarkable in how close it is to our core around GI.
That's interesting. And I wonder how OIV is sort of a new entity. Do you think this would have been, would Olympus have had a relationship with a company like this prior to the founding of a CV group? It seems like you did your job in finding a company that important to what the larger company does.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where Olympus has always tried to be a really good ecosystem player, but they didn't necessarily have the tools for it just yet. Mm-hmm. But again, by becoming through the big transformation that Olympus underwent before I ever joined, becoming a pure med device play, I think that really then opened up an opportunity like Olympus Innovation Ventures to partner with startups in a more, in a stronger fashion by giving them not only access to expertise and advice from Olympus, but also capital, right? Mm-hmm. Because, well, that advice and that value add is absolutely imperative. So is capital, right? And I think that that's something that we now are able to bring to the table that we weren't before.
And how about that second company? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Eximus Surgical was our second investment. And Eximus is a minimally invasive surgical specimen segmentation removal solution. So essentially, they have a bag with electrified wires that could slice tissue for safe and easy removal of that tissue from the body. So what they're targeting first is like hysterectomies, for example, where power morselation, has a black box warning on it these days. And so they're trying to kind of reinvent that to make minimally invasive surgeries actually minimally invasive compared to what they are today.
Interesting. So looking forward to this, and you said you have three more coming. Were the three public and two coming, or two public and three coming?
We've got one more investment that is public information. That's On Target Laboratories.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they are a molecular imaging agent that binds to cancer tissues, and then it fluoresces under near-infrared light. They're targeting first lung cancer, and they are a commercial company now. They're on the market today and seeing tremendous success in being able to illuminate cancer tissue and improve surgical outcomes for patients with lung cancer.
So what does success look like for you? Say, look ahead in 5 years and you're looking back. What will have been a successful outcome for your portfolio in general? I don't want to speak specifically about the three companies, but is it they become part of Olympus? Is it they become they're acquired and generate revenues? Is it they've just grown into being larger separate companies but partners with Olympus? Is it a mix of all three? How do you measure success in the future?
I think first and foremost is that they have improved patient care and outcomes, right?
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, I would, like to see them go down the road towards becoming an Olympus company, right? Or part of Olympus as a whole. Leading to acquisition is definitely like one of the targets of OIV and one of our KPIs, as I mentioned, right? And the third is then just generating revenue, right? And becoming a good financial return for everybody who's involved. We're not the only financiers of these companies by any means. There's many other people who have laid capital on the line behind these visions of improving healthcare, right? And I think that everybody who's taken those risks, hopefully they're all compensated for it, especially the founders who have put so much of their lives on the line to build these businesses. And so I think that those are kind of the three things that I think about as measuring success.
No, those are three great things. Final question, because I know I'll probably get messages from folks on LinkedIn. If someone wants to meet with you and share their story with you, what's the best way? I mean, do they need to find your cousin's, hairdresser and get a message to them that way? Or is it something a little more direct?
Ventures@olympus.com.
All right. That makes it a lot easier.
And it goes directly to my inbox and Touchdown Ventures team over there. They see it all too. And we respond to each and every single one of them. You know, there's always been such an emphasis put on finding a route to introduction or a warm introduction. And, you know, that is great. That's very helpful, right? If it comes through somebody who vouches for you, right? But at the same point in time, I don't think that that's the only way, and it lends itself to some, you know, bad outcomes if it's only via warm introduction, right? So mm-hmm. feel free to reach out. We love to hear from you, especially when it is a very thoughtful, cold outreach, right?
Fantastic. Well, I'm sure you might get an email or two. And thanks for taking the time and sort of exploring the relationship between entrepreneurs and VCs. It's one that you see bandied about on LinkedIn, but it's nice to talk to someone directly involved in those dealings and understand how they look at things. So I appreciate the insights.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for having me. I mean, it's wonderful to be on here. I'm a listener myself, right? And I know that there's lots Yay. Of entrepreneurs who get tons of value out of what you do. So thanks for everything that you give back into this ecosystem as a whole, Tom. I appreciate and floored to be on here.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you. Well, that's a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Please do follow us on social media. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, Tom Salemi. You can connect with Kayleen Brown, our managing editor. And of course, Chris Newmarker himself, the editor-in-chief of Life Sciences here at Mass Device and Medical Design and Outsourcing. We're all there. You can also connect with our individual products as well. So you won't miss any compelling and essential medical device news or insights if you just follow us and connect with us on LinkedIn. Make sure you also share this episode of the podcast on LinkedIn. Finally, do subscribe to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast or the Device Talks Podcast Network, which will get you the Device Talks Weekly Podcast and more. You can do that at any major podcast player, Apple, Spotify, etc., etc. So please don't miss out on that. Finally, Device Talks West registration is opening up next week. I'm putting the agenda together right now. We'll have an early agenda up there on the website with some great keynotes, including Andy Pierce of Stryker and many, many more. We'll be announcing them over the coming weeks, and really hope you'll join us there. I'm trying to build a program that really reflects the innovative and technical spirit of that whole West Coast area, the Santa Clara area, and the surrounding communities that are so essential to MedTech. So I really do hope you'll join us on October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. That's a wrap. Once again, I'll be at the SRS meeting, the annual meeting of the Society of Robotic Surgery. And if you're there, if you know you'll be there, shoot me a DM. I'd love to connect, say hello. Maybe have a conversation and meet your robot or whatever, hear about whatever else you have going on. All right, that's it, folks. Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. We will have one coming your way next week.